the Hero Nation podcast. My name is Sophia Ansari.
And my name is Breck Warren. We are bringing you our fifth episode.
Woo!
Yes, yes, yes! Yay. So, if you want to talk all about Avengers Endgame, all the spoilers, all the reveals, all the insider info, you might have to look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Because today we're going to be talking about biracial and multiracial superheroes.
Yes, and in preparing for this episode, we both had a little bit of difficulties, I think, mm-hmm. Even just finding mixed race characters. So we're realizing that they are rare in movies and TV shows. But whenever I was, you know, doing my research, Aquaman kept popping up mm-hmm. whenever, you know, I, you know, Google stuff. So that was something that I kept reading about was Aquaman.
Mm. Yeah, and Aquaman is a good example. And it's funny because I never thought of Aquaman as being a biracial superhero until recently, just like most people.
Exactly.
And, you know, it, like you said, it is rare, but they are out there. And when the media shows interracial couples and families, you know, it's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in a multiracial relationship myself and raising two kids who are also multiracial, it's fun and sometimes challenging. My wife is biracial herself. Her mom is Oneida, and her dad is Finnish. And as for me, I'm just a black dude, as I always like to joke and say.
You always say you're just the black dude.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just a black dude. So I always explain to my kids, daddy has brown skin, mommy has white skin, and you guys have tan skin. You know, everyone, you know, that is represented, that is being represented on TV or in a movie, I make sure to point that out to my kids, you mm-hmm. know, especially yeah. when it's someone who looks like us or a family like us.
Right.
Like, I remember when Riri Williams, who is now Ironheart, was a star of a run in Invincible Iron Man. There was a variant cover of issue one, and Riri standing there without the helmet on, and she got the big curly hair, and, you know, I showed it to my daughter. I was like, she looks like you. And, you know, she's like, well, but she has brown skin. I'm like, but it's still like you with the hair.
Right.
And I remember going on a field trip with my daughter, who's in 4K, and she told a friend who had seen me before. So kids are just weird. But she told her, that's my daddy with the brown skin.
Aw, so, that's cute. Yeah.
It's like, she saw me. She knows who I am.
Yeah, I do notice you always like try to point it out to your daughter, because like mm-hmm. if I even post something, you're like, oh, I'm gonna show her that, you know. Yeah. So I do see that you always make it a point to show, you know, people that, you know, look like your daughter, just to, you know, build up her confidence, let her know that there are people who look like her in the media. So I think that's really important, yeah. Breck. So that's good. And I know you know, when you were describing, you know, your family and giving a little bit about your background, you used the terms like biracial and there's multiracial. And so I figured we might as well just sort of define it just in case people didn't know.
Yeah.
But so multiracial is just, you know, when an individual is of multiple races, and biracial is when there's two races. I guess yeah. that's pretty self-explanatory, but yes. just in case people didn't know or were confused. But there's also another term that people might hear, and it's called racial imposter syndrome, which is basically when someone struggles with their different identities and cultures, and they can't quite figure out how to present themselves to the world, you know, and it's because, I guess because society just likes to put one label on people, because we're very binary very like that, you know? And so, you know, I've had biracial friends who, you know, might have lighter skin, or, you know, they might look more white or more black, you know, mm-hmm. and then that's what people refer them to, like as that one race, even though that they're both, you know.
Right.
And so people might say to someone, oh, well, you're white because you've been act white, whatever that means.
Yeah.
So that's an experience that I know I've heard my friends have had to deal with, you know, and even like clients that I've worked with say the same thing. And it just goes to show that people in general need to sort of broaden their idea of what being black or white or Asian or, you know, Latinx means.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Latinx is another term. It's just basically like the gender neutral alternative to Latina and Latino. So if we say Latinx, that's what we're saying. But, you know, the more you know moments, that's what we
yes.
do here. And, you know, but, you know, all of this really affects people because they just want to embrace all of themselves and be proud of their heritage. But again, society tries to categorize you with you know, such a confined label, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and I know because my wife jokingly has referred to herself as a daywalker, like Blade. If anyone's ever seen that movie. All the strengths, yeah. none of the weaknesses is how they described him in the movies. And with my wife, she can pass for white. Mm-hmm. So she says that most white people just assume she's white, but right. when she's with other people in her tribe, they can tell she's Oneida. Mm-hmm. And as for my kids, they go to school with enough diversity. I mean, we've got Asians, whites, blacks, natives, Latinos, and is it Latinx's?
Latinx, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even kids from Somalia, you know, yeah. so yeah. they're getting a wider range. And it's amazing to see the parents because so many kids are multiracial.
Right.
I mean, I met another black dude, I like to say, from Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and his daughter is in my son's class and has been for a while. And yeah, it's just so crazy because they're always around kids like them.
Yeah, that's good.
And so at this stage in life, they're okay.
Yeah.
Now, my brothers, on the other hand, who are adopted, my youngest brothers, and they're multiracial too. They're actually Native, Black, and Irish. And they pass for Black and they self-identify as Black. Even though I know my mom put them down as white on the cards, you know, we had to check for race when she was enrolling them for school. Because my mom is funny sometimes. And she was like, well, there's not enough white kids. So we'll put them down because that is part of their identity.
Oh.
And, yeah. you know, there's nothing, you know, there's another thing called race switching that people do okay. where they identify yeah. or de-identify with different parts of the identity. That's usually for social purposes, because I'm sure most people have heard of the term code switching.
Mm-hmm.
That just means, you know, how you talk to different groups of people. When I'm at work, I was once told by a client, Breck, you're the whitest black dude I know. And I told him, it's because I'm at work. I can't talk to you like I would my guys back home. And some people might feel that they have more opportunities if they play up their white self. But I still remember a teacher telling us to use, you know, your correct grammar when you're on the phone because you don't know who you're going to be talking to. Or even in the movie, Sorry to Bother You. Mm-hmm. You know, they had this whole thing where it was called your white voice. You had to use your white voice
mm-hmm.
on the phone when talking to customers. And, you know, again, it's just a coping mechanism for all those different types of things.
Right, right. And, you know, that sort of thing can have a really, you know, significant psychological impact on a person because what's happening is they're trying to just grapple with their self-identity and they're having to sort of, you know, denounce a part of themselves, mm-hmm. you know, like shove it down deep down inside and,
yeah.
you know, turn that part of themselves off. And so, you know, something that a lot of, you know, biracial and multiracial people will, the question that they'll hear is, oh, well, what are you? Right? like that's the question. And it's probably the most frustrating question someone can be asked. And so, you know, Breck, I want to kind of throw this back at you, but I want to mm-hmm. ask you, you know, how do you teach your kids to deal with that when people say stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, we raise our kids by helping them understand that families come in all shapes, sizes, colors, and variations. You know, we celebrate our cultural traditions, of which there are many. And since we live within the Oneida Reservation boundaries, we're always aware of things going on, whether it be sponsored by the tribe or the school. When they have cultural activities, we just celebrate people's differences.
Right.
You know, for example, we've talked about tapping maple trees and when that's done. You know, the importance of the cross and the Night of Creation story, which I might have to put on Facebook because it yeah. is a cool story
about
twins and Sky Mother and the big turtle. And yeah,
just, oh, that's cool.
It's
yeah,
just cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I once told my wife's Uncle Bob, I said, I know black history and culture. I know Oneida history and culture. I just need to learn Finnish history and culture so I can tell the kids that.
Right.
And Uncle Bob looked at me and said, you know what? I don't know much about that either. I need to learn some.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, we just teach our kids that no one person looks exactly the same. I mean, even my kids, you know, they you got lighter tan skin, you got darker tan skin.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we teach them that this, you know, it helps them to be comfortable being themselves. It helps to know that they don't have to fit in any one box.
Yeah, I know. I agree with that. And I think that's, you know, that's a really important point that you made is celebrating all parts of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because how can you know who you are if you don't know where and who you can come from,
yeah.
right? So that's why it's so important. So for parents raising biracial, you know, multiracial children, it's important that you teach them to be comfortable in their own skin. And you can do that by surrounding your kids with diversity. And like you said, Breck, you guys live in a community that's that's really diverse. Your schools have, you know, a lot of diversity. So that's great that your kids get to see that, because it's nice that it's nice not to feel like you're alone, and it's nice to know that there's other kids that look like you. And then, you know, you can also show your kids, you know, diversity in books, like comic books and movies, and expose them to different types of foods from other cultures too, right? I mean, that's great. So all of those types of things creates an environment of acceptance.
Yeah, and just tell your kids how amazing they are. You know, build up their confidence, and that will help them later in life when they are, when they do have to face, you know, some negative racial stereotypes and messages. Again, luckily my kids haven't been confused or confronted with that. And again, unfortunately, people say mean things, so we might want to build up their confidence now, so in the future they can respond and educate instead of react with anger.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Respond instead of react. And you want to encourage your kids to embrace their cultures. And that makes them proud of who they are.
Yeah.
You know, when they can share their food and music with their friends, it's, you know, that's important. I remember people coming over to our house and having like my mom's like home, like cooked Pakistani food and watching Bollywood movies with me, because I was proud to embrace my culture and share that with my friends. So it's just, it's so important to celebrate all of us instead of like selective parts of us.
Right. No, I get it. I mean, I still look when my son went to the museum with his den group, if you know Boy Scouts, they're broke up into different ages and grades, and they were at the museum, and one of the kids said, "That's a wigwam," and my son said, "Well, that's a longhouse,"
which is
again, it's a part of Oneida culture.
Right.
And he's just, you know, it wasn't mad. It wasn't, no, you're wrong. It was just, you know, correction, boom, to move on.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, I know you mentioned Aquaman, and people might like what that does with this conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, well, the role of Aquaman, who, again, was the good DC movies, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was. I liked it. Yeah.
It was played by Jason Momoa, who was a Pacific Islander and white. So casting him was a big deal, because Arthur Curry's comic book version of Aquaman was pretty white. You know, the blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah.
And in the movie, they casted Aquaman's parents, who are played by actors Tamara Morrison. And if I'm saying that wrong, I'm sorry. And he is Moiré. And Moiré, if I'm saying it wrong again, it's spelled M-A-O-R-I. They're the indigenous Polynesian people of New Zealand. And Nicole Kidman, who everyone knows. I think it's from Australia.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
From Australia, yeah.
Yeah. So the movie shows an interracial couple, and their relationship is forbidden because she's an Atlantean and her husband is from the surface world. But the theme of the movie speaks to the topics of, you know, mixed heritage and self-identity.
Yeah, and Arthur, or Aquaman's parents, actually tell him, like in the movie, that his multicultural background is actually his greatest strength. Like, how powerful is that?
Yeah.
And that's what makes him the true rightful heir to the throne of Atlantis. So what a powerful message in that movie. And I think this character has meant a lot to people who are from mixed race families, you know, because the movie explores what it's like to feel like an outsider and not feel like you completely fit in or are part of two worlds, right? So it explores the mixed race relationships. It explores multiracial identity and multiculturalism. And that's pretty huge for a superhero movie, especially a DC movie.
Yes.
and you know, superhero movies have shown, even, you know, if you want to kind of stretch that a little bit, but symbolic mixed race characters too. So, you know, like if you look at Wonder Woman, for example, you know, she's the daughter of Queen Hippolyta and the Greek god Zeus. And in the Marvel, you know, cinematic universe, Star-Lord is the son of a human woman and celestial father, right? And then and that's how they describe him, human woman and celestial father. That's what and then Captain Marvel, you know, Carol Danvers, woohoo, is half human, half Kree, you know? So even Superman is Kryptonian, and he's raised by humans. So a lot of dynamics and symbolisms for multiculturalism, multiracial, whatever, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And even those characters.
Yeah, and I mean, if you watch the CW, you know, you got the Flash on TV. You know, Barry Allen is raised by Joe West, a black guy, when Barry's dad is in jail.
Right.
And Barry often says, You know, that was a great tragedy when his mom died, because that's why his dad went to jail. Mm-hmm. But he got a great dad from that. He got another great dad from that. Mm-hmm. And then if you're looking for other mixed race characters, then you have Miles Morales, you know, from mm-hmm. Ultimate Spider-Man and Into the Spider-Verse. You got Danny Cage, daughter of Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. Sorry if you didn't know that those two end up together in comics. Right,
spoiler alert. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. And then there's mixed race actors who play superheroes like Halle Berry and Catwoman, Zendaya in Spider-Man Homecoming, Tessa Thompson, who played Valkyrie in Thor Ragnarok. You even got Dean Cain, you know, Superman, Lois and Clark. Yeah. And of course, Chloe Bennett, who plays Quake in the television series Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, and then there's Jessica Alba.
Big fan of
Fantastic Four, yeah. And Sin City. And she was in Fantastic Four and Sin City. And then Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, you know, in Shazam. So that's, you know, that's huge.
And then if you really want to go into, you know, metaphors on the topics of multiracial characters, you know, then look at X-Men and the Inhumans.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. So there is stuff out there for anyone who is wanting to add more comic books or toys to their collection. You know, if you're working as a therapist or if you're interested in reading more about diverse characters, and those are some great suggestions that we just listed off right there. And then, Breck, you recommended a show on Netflix called Miraculous, Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir. And I watched, yes. I did watch some episodes and I thought it was cute, but my son wasn't so into it. So it's like hard for me to watch anything if it's not on the TV, you know?
Yeah. And
so he was like, no, he just wasn't into it, but it was cute. I thought it was cute.
See, and it's a show about a female teenage superhero who is French and Chinese. So again, boom, right there.
Right.
And her name is Marinette Dupin Chang, also known as Ladybug. And, you know, she's sort of a cross of Spider-Man and Sailor Moon.
That's a nice description.
Yeah, when you watch it. Yeah. So she wields the power of luck. And the show takes place in France. And it's about Ladybug and her friend / secret crush, Adrian, who's also Cat Noir. And it's also kind of funny because Cat Noir likes Ladybug. Ladybug doesn't like Cat Noir. Mm-hmm. Whereas Marinette likes Adrian. But Adrian doesn't know that Marinette is into him. And it's just funny.
Yeah, it's cute.
And, like, you know, so again, they protect the city of Paris against a villain named Hawkmouth, who tries to steal their powers by using butterflies that are made of black energy to transform people of the city into supervillains. It's a show that's a cross collaboration between French, Japanese, and Korean animation studios. If you watch, wait until you find out who Hawkmouth is. You know, no spoilers for me.
Oh man, now I do get it. Just finish it up and watch it, because that sounds interesting. Okay, I'm gonna have to do that then at some point. But yeah, the show does explore Marinette's Chinese French identity. You know, obviously it's not the main focus of the show, of course, but it's not ignored. They show her struggling to speak Chinese, and she has trouble even communicating with her relatives, which I think can be super relatable to a lot of people, even those who are like first generation Americans, like kids of immigrants who try to balance their American culture versus their parents' culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, having difficulty speaking your parents' language, or people will tell you you don't speak it well enough, or you're whitewashed. And that's something a lot of people like me deal with, where we try to balance both, but then are judged by both cultures, you know? And so this show tackles what it's like to go through that, you know, as a teenager, and, you know, those awkward years, and just really finding a balance in life. So I think that's where the whole comparing her story kind of like to like the Spider-Man, where he's super relatable teenager, comes into play. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Cat Noir's character tries to deal with his dad's high standards and perfectionism. And I know that could be relatable to a lot of people as well.
Right.
You know, it's a show that's good for all ages. It's really family friendly. And therefore, if you want to show it, you know, to a client, or, you know, to a classroom, or use it as an example, you can, you know.
Yeah.
pretty innocent and fun.
Right, no exactly. That's the thing. It's a great recommendation because I think sometimes when we do these episodes, maybe sometimes the things we talk about are not like really family friendly sometimes, yes. You know? Yes. And so it's nice when you can get like something where the whole family can actually sit down and watch it. And then, you know, we mentioned how, you know, like I said, like she's very similar to like the Spider-Man, you know, mm-hmm. Peter Parker kind of person. So of course then that kind of segues into Miles Morales. We have to talk about him.
I mean, the Spider-Verse got an Academy Award, so we gotta bring it up.
Yeah, we gotta. You're right.
You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to ignore that.
Exactly.
Now, for those who don't know, Miles Morales is a biracial superhero, black and Puerto Rican, has spider-based powers like Peter Parker, and was created by writer Brian Michael Bendis, and who, you know, wrote so many stuff,
right.
And artist Sarah Pacelli in 2011. So Miles Morales first appeared in Ultimate Fallout number 4, which was back in August after Peter Parker dies. So again, he possesses powers similar to the original Spider-Man. Enhanced strength, agility, he can stick to walls, ceilings with his hands and feet, has a spider sense that warns him of danger. He also has a camouflage thing where he can kind of turn invisible and what he calls his venom blast. But he's not as strong as the original Spider-Man because it only, you know, his spider sense, I should say, is not as strong because it only warns him of, you know, immediate danger. Whereas Spider-Man would be like, oh, something's falling. Or, oh, I'm about to walk in the room and, oh, it's a surprise party, but spider sense is still going off. And a fun fact is Bendis was actually inspired by Donald Glover, who people know as Childish Gambino if they're into rap. And when Bendis was thinking about the way the character of Miles would look, he thought about the image of Donald Glover from an episode of Community. And the episode was called Anthropology 101. And Donald Glover's character, Troy, was wearing Spider-Man pajamas. And, you know, this was all a part of Glover's campaign to actually play Spider-Man, because at the time, movie studios were looking to cast the lead for the Amazing Spider-Man movies. But they eventually gave that role to Andrew Garfield, and Bendis thought, you know what? He looks pretty great, and had in mind when writing Ultimate Spider-Man, which is basically a modern retelling of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, see, that's a really cool factoid. I know, and I know I said to Andrew Garfield, but I think I would have liked to see Donald Glover. But no, that's really an interesting like fact. And in Community, it's a good show. I've actually just started watching it because one of my shows like ended, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which you need to watch, Brack, because it is so funny.
I know you mentioned it before.
You always say you don't get it. Like you like you're like, I don't understand the appeal, but you gotta watch it. Okay. But yeah, no, Community is a great show. So now when I watch it, I'm gonna look out for that episode. You said it was Anthropology 101 or something.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm gonna watch that now. Yeah.
Okay. See, and another fun fact is that Glover did end up in Spider-Man Homecoming, where he plays, you know, Uncle Aaron, a.k.a. Aaron Davis. You know, and in the movie, his character is talking to Peter Parker, well, talking to Spider-Man, I should say, because he doesn't know, and mentioned that he has a nephew. So it's foreshadowed, you know, in the movie that Miles is out there.
Right. It was a nice foreshadowing there. So, yeah, he did get to have his little, you know, his cameo or his, so, and then he also makes a secret cameo actually in the Spider-Verse movie, which is really interesting because you have to really pay attention, but there's a scene where Miles goes to visit his Uncle Aaron at his apartment, and the TV is on, and if you look really closely, there's that episode of Community with Glover wearing his Spider-Man PJs on the TV. Did you notice that?
No, or, I'll have to go back and look at it again and then pause it. See, just so many Easter eggs in this movie. You know, and it was actually Glover who initially voiced Miles back in the Ultimate Spider-Man animated series, season 3, which was called Web Warriors, excuse me. And he's a great character, and the movie was great. You know, my kids loved it. We took them, you know, the Thursday night showing, you know, so they could see it right away. Basically, because I was hyped about it and wanted to go see it. And they ended up falling in love with it, too.
Yeah,
and I just like how they didn't make Miles' background, you know, the reason behind conflict.
Right.
Just focused on what he had in common with the other characters and highlighted how important teamwork and community is. I love that he spoke Spanish. You know, he would switch back and forth between English and Spanish. He was walking down the street.
Yeah.
And if you notice, the movie didn't have subtitles. And that was because the creator said they just wanted to show that it was just a fabric of Miles' community and family life. And it was just great how both parts of his cultural identity were very present.
Yeah, actually, I love that, too. And I'm glad that they didn't use those subtitles because, I don't know, I feel like that would have just taken you outside of his world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was just nice, like, to get a sneak peek of him just, you know, walking down the street and just talking to people and just being him. And also, you know, people will notice that they had different Spanish accents, you know, in the movie because, you know, accents actually, you know, they change generation from generation. And I can definitely vouch for that because when I'm trying to speak, like, you know, Punjabi, my accent is very different from, you know, like my cousins in Pakistan, right? Because I've got my American accent too. And so that's kind of, so I like that. It was just, it was details like that that just made the movie like so authentic and so relatable.
Yeah, and another character we could mention is Green Lantern's Kyle Rayner, who is one of my favorite Lanterns. And he actually has an Irish mother and Mexican father. And the storyline does show a little bit about how he struggled to find out who he really was, because he never really knew his dad. So he ends up using a lot of resources to find his dad, and traces his DNA and ends up finding out his dad was a Mexican-American CIA agent.
Wow.
And then there's Damian Wayne, a.k.a. Robin.
Yes.
So, the son of Batman and Talia al Ghul. And Talia, of course, being a daughter of the supervisor, Ra's, or how do they pronounce it? It's not Ra's.
Ra's.
Yeah. There you go. Ra's al Ghul, who was Moroccan. And her mom was Chinese and Arab. And over the years, Damian's skin color has been darker for the most part, like in Teen Titans Rebirth. And then in the DC animated movie Son of Batman, you know, he wears traditional Arab clothing. In the Teen Titans annual, he saves a Lebanese immigrant's restaurant that he goes to a lot because he said it reminded him of home.
Mm-hmm.
So they addressed that part of his identity being important to him.
Yeah, we're mentioning this because DC Comics recently, they released, I think it was, yeah, it was this month, April, Super Sons, the Polar Shield Project. So so that's a Zoom imprint for kids. And we'll post a picture of this cover. But so basically there was controversy behind that because what they did is they made Damian white. And not only that, but they, oh my gosh, they changed his name to Ian.
Oh, it's trash. It's trash
it's
already.
Trash, so just toss it. Just toss it. And so that was just, I don't know what they were thinking. You know, and you know, that's just a big blow too, because the name Damian, it is a common, so it's like a Greek name, but there's a lot of Arabs who have that name, and even Muslims that have that name, Damian. And so people, which Damian, I guess, translates, like if the translation of Damian is to tame. And so obviously, even with that, there's a lot of meaning, right? Because, you know, the son of Talia and Batman, right?
Yeah.
So, and we know how he it was. And so to tame, that was kind of like the perfect fit. So, yeah, changing his name to Ian. And so people were like, you know, why are you whitewashing Damian?
Yeah.
And I was looking at the pictures and, oh my gosh, when I post the thing, you guys will see, but they just completely erased his heritage. And, you know, I don't know, next to Miles Morales, like having Damian look biracial, and of course, like you said, like Damian, you know, role, he was Robin, right? So big deal here.
Mm-hmm.
But having a superhero mixed race kid like Damian is a big deal for kids. I mean, Robin, right? And so when you mentioned that, you know, in that one, the one story arc, you said that he really embraced that part of his culture. He always went to that Lebanese restaurant. And I think you said like it was a tea or something.
Yeah,
I know
what
we're talking.
That
reminded him of like his Arab culture, right? And so I don't know. It was just like a great teaching moment that if you're multiracial, that you're the best of both and all worlds, the best of both your parents. Like, I love that they had that, but then they just, I don't know what they were doing in this Polar Shield project thing by just whitewashing him.
It's trash. Yes. Don't say it again. Don't even have his name right. Trash.
Exactly.
Trash. The Damian whitewashing also reminds me of how they rebooted Batgirl at one point. You know, she was half Asian. They changed her back to white, back to Barbara Gordon. And,
right.
You know, we've seen him with the second Green Arrow, who, again, is one of my favorite Green Arrows, Connor Hawk.
Yeah.
And Connor's background was that his mother, Sandra Moon Day Hawk, you know, has a black father and a Korean mother, and his dad is Oliver Queen, was white. No offense against Ollie, but love me some Connor.
Right.
And then you look at the at the comics, like in Quiver, he looks totally white.
Oh yeah, I saw that. And
it's like, come on, man. So I'm like. So it's just an example of progressive lightning in comic books. And of course, many, many more are out there.
Yeah, there's actually a great short comic called Lighten Up, and it's by a guy named Ronald Wimberly, and It shows the importance over these slight coloring differences that they do in the comic books, where they're basically just, you know, whitewashing these characters. And so I'm going to, you know, post that link on Facebook, of course, but okay. I think this conversation kind of then sort of takes us down into a whole other episode on whitewashing. So maybe that will be another episode, because they're definitely like erasing these like characters, like the other part of like their heritage and their background. So I think that'll be a great episode to kind of explore more on whitewashing.
I think so.
Yep.
And I was just thinking about, you know, how and when we were coming up with that list of biracial characters, how hard it was.
Yeah,
you know?
It was.
We were trying to come up with movies, and then I was thinking about the controversy over it. Emma Stone's a multiracial character in the movie Aloha.
Right.
You know, Stone, who's a white actress, plays a half white, quarter Chinese, quarter Native Hawaiian character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this kind of casting is exactly what feeds into the belief that I must not matter because I'd never see people who look like me. Which is sad.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the media needs to understand that when multiracial people see themselves represented in the media, lets them know that they are not alone and that they do exist and they do matter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, like, Emma Stone is, like, the whitest, like, white chick, you know? And then when they casted her for that, like, what? You know? I haven't seen the movie, but it did flop, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, so, you know, there you go. I wonder why, you know? Or just, yeah, there you go. So, and then earlier, you know, we mentioned actress Chloe Bennett. So she plays Quake on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
And she actually, I was reading an interview of hers, but she actually changed her last name. So her last name actually isn't Bennett. Her last name is actually Wang. And so she said that she changed her last name to Bennett because she became really frustrated because she wasn't able to get any acting gigs. So, you know, she sent in her resume or whatever, Chloe Wang, and she wasn't getting any acting roles. And then she changed her last name to Bennett, which is, it's actually her dad's first name. Okay. And then she said that's like when she started getting acting roles, was exactly that moment.
Wow.
I know, that's really sad. Yeah. So she had to do that race switching, you know, that you talked about earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, that's the issue with Hollywood that needs to be addressed, is that Hollywood needs to pay attention because multiracial Americans are actually, you know, they're growing at a rate that's three times as fast as the population as a whole, right? So it's like a growing population of the United States. So if that's a huge, making up a huge representation of the United States, then the media needs to represent the audience. So important.
Yeah, and that's why we, you know, always keep giving a shout out, you know, to these characters. You know, if there's a character you love that we didn't mention, make sure to give them a shout out on Facebook, on our Facebook page. Send us a message so we can include them in a future episode.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we just wanted to sort of, you know, like you said, give a shout out to some characters in this episode and maybe delve a little bit more into why some characters get whitewashed and what the meaning of that means even. So we'll definitely talk about that in our next episode. And I just want to, you know, leave you guys with a quote from Mira from Aquaman. I think they were on a boat in that one scene, and she tells him, you know, she says, "You think you're unworthy to lead because you are of two different worlds. That is exactly why you are worthy." So I really like that quote. So I hope everyone out there listening embraces their differences because, you know, yes, differences make you stand out, but that's something to be proud of. You know, just remember that you are a masterpiece of many things sewn together by love. And I want you to just embrace your cultures, embrace your stories, and be proud of all of you.
I mean, that's all I can say.
Right.
But before we sign off, I just want to remind everyone about an important thing.
Yes.
In Avengers Endgame. No, I'm just kidding. But seriously, though, next week is Free Comic Book Day. So if you've never been to a comic shop, this is the perfect opportunity to do so. It's a bunch of free comic books. You know, in Chicago, I used to go, well, technically it's in Evergreen Park, which is a suburb, but I used to go to All American Comic Shops. So if you go And on that day, just tell Carl that Change Lad sent you. And that was my nickname back in the day at the shop. And, you know, maybe I'll include that story in a later episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is that?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And now that I live in Green Bay, you know, I'll be going to Powers Comics and Collectibles.
Yeah.
You know, and I also order all of my free comic books, so I don't miss any, from G-Mart Comics, which is also in Chicago. So again, you don't have to buy anything, but there's usually sales or signings going on when you go. You know, it's just a chance to just walk in. Even if you just want to walk in, pick up, you know, some free comic books and walk out.
Right.
You know, either way, it's just a good way to support your local comic shop.
Oh, yeah. My kid loves it. He knows exactly when it's coming up. It's just, he has his collection over the years of all his free comic books that he's gotten. And he's gotten some good stuff, too, I'll tell you. So.
And it's also easy to remember the first Saturday in May.
Yes.
You know, it never changes.
Exactly. That's awesome. So good reminder. So hope you guys go out and support your local comic book shops.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to thank you for joining us. And we can't wait to bring you more superhero love.
Yes, so true. Thanks, everyone.